Okay, yeah, so I'm talking about helium white dwarf and binaries. I'll come back to this one later. So a brief outline is just to tell you a little bit about what I mean by helium white dwarfs and why they're interesting, and talk about finding them, looking at double white dwarfs with helium white dwarfs, and then finally helium white dwarfs with main sequence companions, and I'm talking about detached and semi-detached there. I'm going to try to highlight what we don't know. Okay, so briefly, a helium white dwarf, you can make it. So what we're talking about is something that's primarily composed of helium. It might not look like it, as we'll see later. But you can make it by preventing the star from reaching the helium flash or starting to burn helium at all. And we think the only way we can do that is in a binary. I think there's some limit below which a star won't manage to start burning helium. I can't remember the number. Someone here might be able to, but it's well below one solar mass, and it won't ever happen in the lifetime of the universe. So low-mass stars making helium white dwarfs, I believe, is not possible, low-mass single stars. So we really think it has to be in a binary. So why look at these things? Well, just from what I've said, the helium white dwarfs are good traces of binary evolution. Wherever you see them, binary interactions probably happened. They can cool very differently from CO white dwarfs, and thus they affect the use of white dwarfs for age measurements in globular clusters, and also in particular in millisecond pulsars, where the companions, you can sort of try to match the age of the white dwarf and also the spin down age of the millisecond pulsar. And finally, sort of context of this conference, they could provide a rather significantly different scenario for explosions if they can be made to explode. I think Lars may be talking about that. Okay. So just briefly on helium white dwarf companions and millisecond pulsars. I'm not going to be talking about this very much, but they give you very nice examples of helium white dwarfs. And that is that the red giant core mass radius relation leads to a relationship between the mass of the companion to millisecond pulsars, which means spun up during accretion, and their orbital period. And so if I can take... I prefer this. If you're talking down here, this range of periods here, which is going from 1 day up to 100 days, and map that down. You're talking low-mass helium white dwarfs here. In fact, most cases, the companion is likely to be a helium white dwarf. And there are some nice examples of this. So here's one. This is what a helium white dwarf looks like. And I want to make the point here that I'm calling this a helium white dwarf, and we talked about CO white dwarfs, but all white dwarfs, or a large number of them, don't look anything like their average composition. They just look like hydrogen white dwarfs, okay? So the very small amount of hydrogen on this white dwarf floats to the top, and that's all you see. You just see 100% hydrogen. So we can never tell by abundance of white dwarfs what their primary composition is. In fact, the only thing we've got to go on is their mass. And you see the mass in this case, as Jim was pointing out when he showed a nice comparison between a very high mass white dwarf and a normal mass white dwarf. These upper Balmer lines were disappearing. We got the opposite effect here, where we're seeing a whole stack of upper Balmer lines. And that's because of the very low gravity of this particular system. So this is spectroscopically measured at around 0.18 solar masses. That's a helium white dwarf. And you can see you can see the gravity in the spectrum directly. And that's really the only way we can tell that something is likely to be a helium white dwarf. Okay, so there's no other way of distinguishing them. So if we look, this is what I was talking about, Jim having shown stuff before. This shows the log GT effective measurements from Jim's paper on PG survey white dwarfs. And just roughly, I've identified in red ones which may be helium white dwarfs. Again, we can only tell just by their location within this diagram. And the red curves are models from Althaus et al. For helium core white dwarfs. There are also some Wood models for CO white dwarfs. And if you compare, say, this lower red one here, which is one of the Althaus models for 0.406 solar masses, and you can see the Wood model for 0.4. So they don't change by a huge amount, except towards the hotter end of that diagram. And remember, of course, when you're seeing this diagram, as Jim pointed out, it's highly biased towards the low-mass white dwarfs because they're larger, and so it's a magnitude-limited sample where they're going to be overrepresented. But you can see there are quite a few of those white dwarfs there, which we don't think could have come from single-star evolution. And this is also, as I said, this is directly shown by Jim, identifying this peak here, which tends to disappear if you include the volume-limited factor. And it was that peak originally in the in Bergeron, Pierre Bergeron's paper of 1992 that led me to start looking at these things, because if these things are coming from binary star evolution, there are good reasons to think that they're still within binaries. And so that's when I started looking at them. And this is a paper from 1995, which at this time there were just two double white dwarfs known, two double degenerates. And so I started to look at these Helium white dwarfs as a good candidate for being double degenerates. And when I looked at the first seven systems, five of them turned out to be double degenerates. And you can just see this obviously in the motion of, say, that one there. These are just spectra taken on a few nights covering H alpha. You're seeing the narrow core that H alpha has in DA white dwarfs, and the clear motions there, which subsequent observations showed that these were circular orbit binaries. And so these were a very nice confirmation, this general idea that helium white dwarfs were associated with binary evolution. And this is since that on to what Ralph will be talking about later. In some cases, we see both white dwarfs. In most cases, we don't, but in some cases, we do. In most cases, one of the white dwarfs is dominant, and the other one is just too cool or got the wrong spectrum to be possible to see. This gives an example where it's quite a struggle, but we can actually see both white dwarfs. So on the left-hand side, here's the brighter white dwarf doing its stuff on a period of 88 minutes. This is the shortest period of such system known. And you should, I think, be able to see the very faint background white dwarf. That's the companion star, and you can, which is shown more sort of clearly on this side after I've tried to subtract out the brighter one. And you can see it's essentially doing an orbit which looks like very similar amplitude, and it indeed is. This is a very equal mass ratio system around one here. Okay, so I want to sort of highlight some of the problems. The first thing, which just alluded to in that previous OHP, was showing that the mass ratios tend to be close to equality, whereas you tend to expect that the second white dwarf to form should be the least massive, because it forms within a smaller system. That was the initial prediction before these things were found. And that doesn't seem to have been found. In most cases, we're finding mass ratios close to equality. And I think Heiss will be talking about that more later, so I'm not going to say anything more about that. It seems to possibly imply that the whole common envelope physics have to be changed in these cases. Next one, why aren't all helium white dwarfs in binaries? So that's a simple one. Simple one for me to answer, at least. I'm an observationalist, so I don't know. I haven't a clue, just like Jim. I really don't know why that's the case. I'll show a thing just to illustrate just how many of these things are not in binaries. That's a really old one. And then finally, one which is maybe not quite such a problem, but why aren't there more very low mass ones, below 0.3 solar masses? So just to illustrate some of those points here with a fuller survey, which Ralph will be talking about, Ralph Napowatzky. This is the SPY survey to normally look for potential double degenerate progenitors of type 1As. But from my point of view, the interesting thing about it was to find lots more binary candidates of white dwarfs. And in this diagram, every star here is, we believe, to be a binary. And it's showing the standard sort of great unwashed of CO white dwarfs here, but also the ones I'm talking about here, these helium white dwarfs. And I just plotted a couple of those outhouse models up there. And the two things to note from that were, there are lots of binaries amongst the helium white dwarfs. Actually, quite a lot of binaries amongst the CO white dwarfs, but there's certainly a higher fraction amongst the low-mass white dwarfs. But there are lots of them which are not binary. All those dots are not binaries, and the constraints from SPY are pretty good. If it doesn't show to be a binary there, it really is difficult to believe that it is a binary. There may be a few oddballs where we've just been unlucky, but it's certainly the case that they are not all binary by any means. And the other thing to note is, that star up there, it's not really there, it's just to illustrate those are the binaries. There are none above this line, or just one or two above that line there. There aren't any, very few, very low mass helium white dwarfs. That was the second point I made. So just look at a little bit more in that that point about the very low mass systems. There are some honorable exceptions, which I mentioned. So Jim found one, actually, a rather nice one, with a very low mass white dwarf, and of course the millisecond pulsars, a lot of those are very low mass white dwarfs. But amongst the field, what would we expect? First of all, as Jim points out, their size should really favour them. In a magnitude limited sample, I should quite easily see the low mass white dwarfs because they're bigger. And I calculate, I hope I got that right, it's a factor of 2 in favour of 0.2 compared to 0.4 solar masses. We're tending to see most things at around 0.4. On the other hand, the thing that goes against them is the core mass radius relation. So what point, no problem, probably finish earlier. that's tending to favour the higher mass end of these low mass white dwarfs. But then there's another point which goes the other way, which is there have been predictions of fairly thick hydrogen envelopes at very low mass white dwarfs, below 0.3 solar masses, which really slow down the cooling. You get this sort of low-level hydrogen fusion that carries on, and so they get very overrepresented in any magnitude-limited survey. And Heiss actually sort of put that explicitly in his models of 2001, and that just shows up here. The this is just looking at the binary helium white dwarfs only, showing the period versus the mass, spectroscopic masses there. And if you have this model with the hydrogen fusion carrying on the low mass white dwarfs, I thought you'd get in the top, where you're getting this prediction of quite a few at around 0.3 and below. That hasn't really been seen, and it just doesn't seem to really agree with the observations. And so Heiss and his model just had one where he just assumed that was absent, giving you a much better fit there. So I presume that something like that is the answer. Okay, so now I'm going to be moving on to looking at, looking at helium, double helium white dwarfs. Now I want to look at helium white dwarfs with cool companions. And there are several examples of helium white dwarfs with main sequence or near main sequence companions amongst the 40 detached. Luckily, I didn't manage to pick the same number as Boris there. We weren't collaborating there. Around 40 detached systems with known peers and sort of some known parameters. These are ones I could find. The only one I'm not absolutely sure about is this one, because I didn't have access to that particular translation of the Russian paper there. So I'd certainly like to try and get that here. If possible, because that's one of the lowest ones here. So these other ones here are let me get that right. This one's an eclipsing system. Don't think that one is. Some of these white dwarf main sequence stars, you can get quite good constraints on the inclination from modelling the reflection effect or the ellipsoidal effect. So that's, you need inclination ever to get masses in these systems, or that's the best way of doing it. And of course, in some of them you can also get fairly reasonable, just log GT effective type masses. But these are the certain ones. And that's out of the ones with decent parameters. That's quite a large fraction. I can't remember the precise number. But by no means all of those 40 have masses that good. So they look quite common amongst these systems, and you'd expect that. We're talking helium white dwarfs being created within binaries. These are close binaries. We'd expect there to be lots of helium white dwarfs amongst these systems. So that's good. But the big problem is that there seem to be no clear-cut ones amongst the very large number of cataclysmic variable stars. Now that is a bit of an exaggeration, in the sense that cataclysmic variable stars are notorious for being very difficult to get the masses properly. Okay, so we're talking very few decent masses, and always remember that to know something is a helium white dwarf, I need to know the mass. If I can't do that, I just can't say whether it is or not. But I want to look at that in a bit more detail. So this goes back to an old problem with white dwarf masses in cataclysmic variables. It's a paper by Ritter and Burkert in 1986, which was pointing out that, given all the uncertainties of the white dwarf masses at that time and still today, it did seem as though the average white dwarf mass in a CV was a lot higher than it is in the field, and they had it down there as about one solar mass. Previously, we've seen Jim's been quoting sort of 0.6 there, and that's where the peak for the single stars mass is. Okay, so let's just assume that those masses are correct, and there would be no problems. What are the various possibilities? First thing is, CV masses, maybe they've grown through accretion. I'm quoting here the objections that Ritter and Burkert put in their paper. They eliminated that one on the basis of NOVA ejection. The element abundance is suggesting that you actually lose mass. I'm not absolutely sure. I've seen some of the talks from this conference maybe suggest that's not so certain. And it's a very interesting question. I'd like to be something nice to resolve during this workshop. Mass is high from the start, so just some evolutionary explanation. Well, the helium white dwarfs in the detached system suggest that's not the case, or not necessarily the case. We've certainly seen some cases which can become CVs with helium white dwarfs. So there's no intrinsic reason why it shouldn't be possible. It certainly should make it difficult to make a CV with a helium white dwarf for a long period, because the mass transfer is unstable in that case. But certainly, once you get down to short periods, you really start to expect some helium white dwarfs there. Mike Politano predicted something like 50% of all zero-age CVs have helium white dwarfs. I don't know if that's a realistic number, but it's clearly showing that theory can also produce a large number of these systems. So neither of those two explanations, or we assume that neither of them work. And so Ritter and Burkert favoured selection effects. Okay, so this is the idea that higher mass white dwarfs imply a higher accretion luminosity for a certain M dot, and that gives you the bias towards high masses, and that's what their whole paper was about, framed in lots of integrals, looking a little bit more complicated than necessary, I think, but they did think that it explained the selection. So what I want to talk about just in the last part of this talk is that nowadays I think we're starting to get a few decent masses of CVs. And this is the part that Boris already showed. This is an example of a nice system. I'm not particularly interested in the fact that it's got a brown dwarf companion. My interest here is the white dwarf. And what I've got here is the light curve of an eclipsing system taken from the SDSS survey, 82-minute period. And it's actually quite typical for some of these rather short period CVs being found by the SDSS survey, which is that it's got the white dwarf virtually dominating the light output of the system. Okay, so that step there, that in the blue, the blue model there, is the white dwarf part of it. And anything extra, so that little green bit and the little purple bit, that's the accretion part. The purple bit is what we assume to be accretion disk, so it's a broad underlying model, very, very feeble. And the green part is actually light from where the stream hits the disk, so-called bright spot. Okay, so neither of those is actually very large compared to the white dwarf. So we can't use Ritter and Burkert's selection just on the basis of accretion luminosity in this case. And I would argue that Dean Townsley's and Lars Bilson's work indicates that the temperature of the white dwarf, which is dependent upon compressional heating due to accretion in these systems, depends rather mildly on the mass, so that when the white dwarf starts to dominate as in this system, I'd expect that the mass radius relation should favour the detection of CVs with helium white dwarfs. Now that needs to be worked out properly, be a nice thing to do, but that's just I don't think there's going to be a strong selection effect against these helium white dwarf systems, at least. Okay, so that implies that what we should be trying to do to test this is to measure the mass of the white dwarf in low luminosity systems which are not found through outbursts. Okay, if we find ones through outbursts, then we've gone back to this selection effect on the basis of accretion luminosity, so we've got to avoid that. And so the SDSS survey, which found it just through their colours and spectra, is the way you want to do it. And so I've avoided all the previous white dwarfs which have been found maybe through outbursts in the past. And they're finding a fair few. There are more than this, but these are the ones we've measured so far. So we've had a sort of campaign of trying to determine parameters of these systems, partly to get these brown dwarf companion ones. But I'm also interested in the white dwarf. I'm more interested in the white dwarf, in fact. And these are the masses. And they're all high, as you can see. They start at 0.7 and they're going up to almost 1 in every case. And these are all short period systems. And this is work done, you know, in collaboration with Stu Littlefair in Sheffield. And just to show you that, so this is now putting them those masses compared to some of the older masses from the systems which have been found through outbursts. Absolutely no sign whatsoever that these are lower mass than the other ones. Okay, if anything, they're higher. Okay, but it's a small number still. But the one sort of possible helium white dwarf is this one here, EX Hydra. But it's not within any sort of accuracy that we can really say that's true at the moment. So complete absence of helium white dwarfs and rather massive white dwarfs overall. Where's the erosion of the white dwarf in these systems? Anyone tell me that? Okay, so do they all start at 1.3 solar masses and get eroded down? I don't think so. So we're really quite well out. Okay, so that brings me to the conclusion. So we know of really quite a few helium white dwarfs now. And they really are, in many cases, associated with mass transfer in binaries. But there are some outstanding problems. So where are these really low mass ones in the field? Are they just unrecognized so far? Do we just think they're, I don't know, SDB stars or something? Why are so many of them apparently single? I think that's a really quite outstanding problem in this area. And where are these CVs with helium white dwarfs? Thank you. Excellent.
Well, one possibility, of course, is that they all were in Bandit, but it's been up on a supernova. Because in that case, the companion stars are completely destroyed, and the other people are allowed to be like four. I think it's the only way of how you can form is one of them very high to be like four.
Do you expect large velocities from that, or?
It depends on the orbit here.
Right.
Now, if you look at the other two like four, and look at the kinematics,
anyone got an alternative explanation to? Yeah, go on.
Are going to ask if there's any evidence that these are inertial stars. If you go into binary evolution for the humans, I haven't done these numbers because I hadn't thought about this before we threw it off and threw it off the planet. But, there could be a case where you have an unstable, you did have an unstable mass transfer, you end up with a very long mass.
We have sort of thought about that. I'd say first there isn't any evidence of that, any direct evidence. Would you be able to see it? If you expect the merged object to be rapidly rotating, then perhaps you could tell. We have looked at some of these single ones, apparently single ones, and they didn't show any evidence that they were rapidly rotating. But on the other hand, maybe you can just get rid of the angular momentum and end up looking at that. So, possible, but I don't know for sure. Yeah. I don't know whether that could also get rid of the low mass ones, but they'd all have to merge. But, yeah. No, the ones I had there were virtually all eclipsing systems because I don't trust any masses of not in eclipsing systems.
That's okay. I think now that low mass, I just mentioned it because it's very low, may actually be an artifact of making optical data when you're mentioning others. And they show the profiles are very complicated. So maybe there is a human system or there are different components. And so the radio velocities are not actually
right.
Major.
Yep, I can believe that. Yeah. Yep.
First question. In the Eisenstein 9000 Pulse 44 catalog, we have about a order of 10.1% that are down around 2/10 or 2500, depends on where you draw the line on what was pulled for a little map. But we can't find them with Sloan because only of the fits to the Bohmer lines would show that they're not normal A stars, and the coolers in the human GGMs are not normal for the A stars that were lying over there in the right-hand side of the plot that I showed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we now know how to find them among the field. But 10 years ago, if I looked at a spectrum of something or in the PT survey 20 years ago, I probably would have called them an A star.
Right. So you favour the unrecognised so far, or well, they aren't now.
Sure.
But now they're recognised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magnetic fields, no. I mean, I think none of them so far have any measurable magnetic field. I think that's correct. Unless anyone's got any. Boris, your laptop?
Yes.
Oh, is it still using?